July 18th, 2019 at 9 a.m. We just, as a reminder, this is a professional board setting, and we ask that you not be speaking when we're speaking. And if any of you are coming up to the table, we will give you that same courtesy. We also ask that you please turn your cell phones off, and board members, please make sure your microphones are on. We will start with introductions. My name is Tracy Kagan, and I am the chair of the board.
I'm Jose Gonzalez. I'm the vice chair.
Kathy Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Dr. Leslie Easley, board member.
Michael Bellew, public member.
Jack Hoffer, executive director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schneider, attorney for the board. And Kathy Stone, licensing administrator.
Okay. Everybody signed in for CEUs. I heard Kathy asking about that, and we will do a roll call. I think she said it, but we'll do a roll call at the end of the meeting, so please make sure you do not leave before that has happened. We will start with approval of the consent agenda, which are items Roman numeral 1 up to and including Roman numeral 2H.
So moved.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. You're going to see me probably skip around the agenda a little bit. We have some things that are done at specific times, so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I promise there's a method to my madness. But we will get started with 3A, and that's a board member recognition. And the board would like to recognize Michelle O'Hare Schattenberg for her years of service here on the board as a board member. So if you would like to come on up here, see what we got you.
Pictures.
Oh, and a picture. Okay.
We all gonna give up for a picture?
Yeah,
we
go. Oh, really?
For now.
I'll stand next to you.
I'm shorter, so I'll have a picture.
So let's go ahead and read this first so everybody can see. So it's a plaque, and it's in recognition and gratitude for your dedicated service to the citizens of the state of Arizona and commitment to the public's health, safety, and welfare 2012 through 2019.
Wow. Yeah, so thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Group photo. All right. Great.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Come back anytime.
I know. I've already been recruited. Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll find a chair for you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
And Michelle, just you came to the board in 2012, which was quite some time ago. You came in during a time of organizational change with staff and the board, and through all that, you kept right on the mission with cases and your votes and protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the state of Arizona. So I thank you also. Very much appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Can I say a couple words?
Sure.
So first, I wanted to thank the governor for appointing me to this board. It was a great challenge for me. Because I am not a respiratory therapist. I'm a lawyer by trade. And so I knew nothing about respiratory care when I came to this board. So I appreciate the great board members that I worked with being patient with me. They challenged me on things that I knew nothing about, and I hope that I challenged them as well. I do miss the interaction at times, but I do appreciate your taking me in and making me one of your own. I also want to, I think the staff of the board also deserves to be recognized. Kathy, Charlotte, and especially Jack. Jack's right, I did come into this at a time of turmoil, transition, and it's important at those times to keep their focus on what the mission of the board is. And I think they do yeoman's work. This board has 3 staff members and Frankie, and they do a lot with very little. So I think they deserve to be commended also, especially Jack, who I think from 2012 till 2019 has really made an effort to turn the mission of the board, make it more focused on keeping and maintaining the standards of respiratory care. I do have a little message for those of you who are licensees and want to be licensees. Pay attention. This is how you've chosen to make your living. And your licenses should be the most important thing to you. Don't rely on what other people have to say. One of the worst things I can hear is somebody told me this is, whatever it is, this is true. If you have questions, the website's great. Call the board, office, but do not assume anything about your license. If you value it, pay attention. Anyway, thank you all. I appreciate your having me this morning.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks.
All right, we are going to stay with Roman numeral 3, but I'm going to jump down to 3E, and that's going to be review, consideration, and possible action on a prior board decision. And the board will call the case of Ashley Portman, case P003802-18-010397. Good morning.
485.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is a case where we had a probation issue for, I believe it was 2 years, is that correct? During that time, RCP Portman was required, previously known as Adams, RCP Adams was required to submit quarterly reports to us. I've reviewed, she asked for to lift her probation before that 2 year time frame is expired. We have already done 1 year of probation. I have received all of the reports from her employer. There have not been any issues with compliance with the order during that time, and I think we only had one other little issue come up in the form of a complaint, which was not related to the issue that was disclosed in the original probation.
Do we have a copy of the original complaint?
The original?
Or the original order of the probationary order?
We do. Is it not in the materials? I apologize. I thought that was in the materials.
Is this a request to lift probation?
This is a request to lift probation prior to the 2 years.
Of the early termination.
Okay.
I think that you saw previously.
Yeah, okay. Just listed different on the agenda than I've seen. Okay.
The staff recommendation is to grant the early termination of the probation.
Ms. Portman, is there anything you would like to say while that's being passed around?
I'll say now, about certain times in my life, I'm like, how could I be so careless, to have done all of the navigation and charting and just not take my license seriously. Because now, document all day long. Stay late to document, just cover yourself, and it's so important to chart everything, because it wasn't done if it wasn't charted, so. But I take my own very seriously, and now to be lifted off probation would take the major weight off my shoulders. So I have three and three of that.
Have you changed employment at all in the last 2 years? And is this your only employer?
Yes.
For charity.
You want to expand on as far as your more meticulous in your charting and your seriousness of your license and what have you? Anything else?
I just started with 4 patients, and now it's at 36. So it's growing, and it's awesome to be a part of that. It's continuing to grow into like a North Mountain rehab type facility. It's, we started with raw oxygen, piped in the wall, portable stuff. So it's very cool to be a part of that. I see growth for that, and I just want to continue doing good and doing everything that I'm supposed to. I look back now, and I don't know what I was thinking.
Was it just young in your career? And
yeah, thinking I could cut corners. So,
and you feel like you've learned something over these last couple of years?
So I have a motion to approve the her request. Motion to grant her request to remove probation, having completed 1 year already.
We have a motion,
a second,
and a second for granting the request. Board members, any discussion? All in favor of granting the request, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes. Good luck to you.
Good luck.
All right, not quite time for our first timed one, so I will go to 3D, which is consideration and action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of Debbie Foster, case 2019-RCE-0151.
415.
Thank you.
Which was it?
415.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this case is a failed CE audit. RCP Foster was audited for continuing education after last renewal. Her renewal time frame was from April 27th of 2017 through April 27th of 2019. She submitted 22 hours of approved CE for the renewal time frame, however, did not provide 3 hours of live continuing education that were not documented. She failed by 3 hours. RCP Foster has been in contact with the board and was sent an amended consent agreement which reflect an adjustment to the number of live hours identified in the audit, and that was July 15th.
So for clarification for me, she submitted 2 hours of live CE.
Correct.
Not five.
Correct. Okay. So a lot of times when we review the audits, it's not apparent to us whether the continuing education certificate is a live class. Mm-hmm. So she was originally cited for not having any live CE, 5 hours. She talked with me, identified 2 of those hours were actually live, so she was given that credit.
Okay.
Then she was resent a consent agreement
and didn't
sign it.
Yeah, it's a rather short time frame, but she was aware of the circumstances of the meeting and so forth.
Okay.
So since it's not resolved.
Then I motion we move this to an informal if you do not receive that signed consent agreement.
Okay, we have a motion
second.
And a second to go to an informal interview. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. We will move on to the case of Monica Evans, case 2019-RCE-0148.
417.
Yeah.
Four what?
17.
Madam Chair, members of the board, case number 2019-RCE-0148. RCP Evans was audited for continuing education. Her renewal time frame was from April 11th, 2017 through April 17th of 2019. She did submit 20 hours, but she did not provide proof that she had 5 hours of live or 2 hours of ethics in those 20 hours that she had submitted. So she is short a total of 5 hours for her license renewal.
And we've not heard from her.
I do not believe so.
Okay.
Motion to move to an informal.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to go to an informal interview. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That motion passes. so I'm going to go back to 3C on our agenda, and we will be under the heading of consideration and possible action on formal complaint hearings, and the board will call the case of Mark McBee, case 2019-RCE-0044 and 2019-RCE-0104. And we had a changing of the guards up here.
What? She was asking me about the script.
Oh, okay.
I have
the
same one, right?
See, everyone likes the script.
I'm going to say the right one.
Four.
One fourth measure.
Yep. I'll make sure I have my own next time.
Okay.
Just for the people in the audience there, when we get to certain things in the agenda, I have a script to read. So if you see me looking down and reading from something, it's for a purpose. Okay, so this is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with the case of Mark McBee is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners. It appears that he is not here. The state filed a motion asking the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted pursuant to ARS 32-3553K. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of the appropriate discipline in light of violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its requests, and then the respondent, if present, can address the board. The parties should limit their remarks to issues presented in the motion, including the time and manner of the service of the complaint, and whether respondent filed a timely answer. If the respondent did not timely file an answer, the respondent should explain the reasons in doing so. I guess it's you.
Attorney General Franklin Medford, representing the state.
Sorry.
The state has filed a motion on July 3rd to deem the allegations admitted. Should be in your materials. The board has the statutory authority to impose discipline pursuant to the allegations stated within the complaint notice of hearing if the license holder fails to respond within 30 days of being properly served. ARS 32-3553K provides that a licensee shall respond in writing to the board within 30 days after notice is served, as prescribed in subsection J of this chapter. The board may consider a licensee's failure to respond within this time as an admission by default to the allegations stated within the complaint. The board may then take any disciplinary action allowed by this chapter without conducting a hearing. Board staff in this case mailed a copy of the complaint notice appearing to respondent on May 28th via U.S. Postal Service certified mail with return receipt requested by regular mail to the respondent's address of record and by electronic mail to respondent's most current email address. Service of the process was therefore complete on May 28th, 2019, pursuant to the statute. The certified mailing was actually claimed by respondent on May 30th. The document sent via regular postal mail to the respondent's address of record have not been returned to the board as undeliverable, and documents regarding this investigation were previously sent to respondent via regular mail, and those have not been returned as well. All documents sent as attachments to respondent by email were not returned as undeliverable. Respondent was properly served in this case and had actual notice of this formal hearing today. Board staff not only sent the notice by certified and regular mail, but went beyond reasonable measures by attempting to send the notice by email as well. As of July 3rd, respondent had failed to respond to the complaint within 30 days after the complaint was served pursuant to the statute. Therefore, the state respectfully requests that the parties in jurisdiction, factual allegations, and alleged violations stated in the complaint notice of hearing be deemed admitted and the board take disciplinary action without conducting the hearing.
Okay, thank you. So this time the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion.
I motion to deem the parties' jurisdictional statements and factual allegations contained in the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
Can we pull that one?
I was going to say she wants it separate.
A motion to grant or deny the motion.
Motion to grant the motion to deem.
Okay, so we have a motion to grant the motion to deem. Do we have a second? And we have a second to that. Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes. Now
I can do that.
Now you can do that one.
So a motion to deem the parties and jurisdictional statements and factual allegations contained in the complaint notice of hearing as findings of fact and adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That motion passes. And now we can talk about the discipline.
I motion for revocation of licensure.
I second.
A motion and a second and a third for that. Any discussion on that one? We will do a roll call vote, please.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Dr. Leslie Easley, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. That motion passes. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Okay. All right. So now I have to go down because of time. We have things at certain times again. So we're going to go back to 3D, consideration and action on investigations of possible unprofessional conduct. And the board will call the case of Melissa Allen, case 2019-RCE-0080.
418.
No, Chair, I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay, thank you. We have one recusal. Noted for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the board, just for the other cases where we might have motions to deem, since we have an audience here, it might benefit the audience to give them a brief summary of what the case was about, like in RCP 5B. They heard the hearing process motion deemed, but they don't know what the facts were or anything.
Okay.
Maybe we can give them a little summary of...
I think that would be a good idea. So in that process, would we do it before we...
Right after you provide a summary prior to the motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. All right. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for bringing that up. Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for being here today.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2019-RCE-0080. It involves RCP Melissa Allen. RCP Allen has been licensed with us since January 19th of 2006, and that license is set to expire December 18th of 2019. Last reported employer that we have was Pima Medical Institute. RCP Allen does have a letter of concern on file from 2016, and we do not have any public access criminal records found when I did the check. The allegation in this case was that RCP Allen was terminated from her position with the Pima Medical Institute for falsifying student records. The complaint that we have received actually came in from three different sources. It was self-reported by RCP Allen. It came in from the campus director at Pima Medical Institute, and I think we had one other report from someplace about this termination. The case description is that in March of 2019, the respiratory director received a complaint from the students that Ms. Allen was not grading their clinical items in an ethical manner. Upon further review, the campus director discovered that Ms. Allen was falsifying student records, awarding fake grades to clinical students, violating Pima Medical Institute's grading policy, and failing to oversee and educate clinical students. She was terminated for those allegations, and what the campus director and leadership saw as an ethical violation. RCP Allen did respond to the complaint within an appropriate time frame. She basically describes that there are ongoing or have been ongoing concerns between the campus director and herself. And she goes into length in her response about the reason for termination. Reason for termination was given about the SOAP's additional write-up in November of 18 for an incident, and it's a lengthy response to the allegations. I don't have anything further unless the board has any questions, and Ms. Allen, RCP Allen, is here to give her five-minute summary to the board.
Okay. Thank you again for being here. When we're at the allegation stage, you will have 5 minutes to tell us anything and everything you want us to know about this case. At that time, the board will have conversations among themselves, but nothing back and forth with you. Okay? The floor is yours.
Was terminated from Pima. He was very accurate in stating that it was about grading, and unethical, I think, is an odd phrase. All of the SOAPs were put into the computer. I was
them grading them fast. They were on a deadline, and I overgraded. I missed mistakes. I didn't take off willy-nilly. At that time, I had had a really rough winter. I was on a lot of prednisone. I had an O2 tank behind my desk. I was taking SBNs frequently. And so I was just, I was worn out. And, I adamantly admit that, I missed some mistakes on the soaps. They were computer graded. They were all in there. But I didn't, choose a student to grade poorly or anything like that. I just didn't quite catch all of the mistakes that he would like me to have graded more stringently on. Initially, we were supposed to have had the clinical instructors grade them, but Nathan had terminated the clinical instructor, so I had taken over that job, so I was seeing students. I was doing the DCE. I was taking over the classes for that clinical instructor that had been terminated, so I was doing three jobs, and that's why I was rushing through the work. And there was just no one to help me, and I was... And that's basically what happened. I admittedly admit that I misread and didn't take enough time to grade those soaps. But it just, I was felt like I was under a lot of pressure. I was working 10-hour days and doing the best I could.
Okay. So have a few minutes if you want anything else.
That's really the gist of that whole situation. I mean, Nathan and I always had conflict, and he was always kind of picky about things. But in his statement, he mentioned something about me working for the former campus director. The campus director that had left with issues with the CEO. And I was terminated, and the other woman that was working with her was terminated as well. So I don't know if that had something to do with my termination. I didn't even realize it until I read his statement that John had sent me.
Okay, thank you. Board members, only conversation with ourselves.
I have questions that I'd like to ask. I know that I can't.
Correct.
I appreciate her response to us. Page 420. Her statement in regards to the reason for termination given a violation of grading policy, more specifically incorrect grading of soaps. Mm-hmm. Her statement on... going into 5. I do not get the impression that it was unethical. It sounds based on her statement that she provided, it sounds that she intentionally graded that way. But I gave several students 100% even though they quote unquote earned less due to the fact that they had not been seen that week at clinicals by their instructor.
Right.
I have questions about that statement specifically.
Right. Because that's not a mistake in grading. That's intentional.
Right.
But was there not an instructor to see them?
Right.
Because the instructor didn't.
But that doesn't mean you up their grade, because no one went out to see them at clinicals.
Right.
But then what do you do, is my question.
Because you don't know, right, because you don't, they could have been there, so you don't count them down because there's not a clinical instructor to go there and check on them. It's kind of the way
I don't know what you do. Do you just omit that grade for that week? But I don't see how that's possible. So I have questions.
Well, that's not if it's a soap that they're doing.
Are we grading soaps?
Well, I don't know what they do. Things.
This is why I have questions.
Uh-huh. I understand. I have questions myself.
So I think to get clarity to some of my questions, I would move to go to an informal.
I think we just need to have agreed. We need some more information.
Correct. That was going to be my next thing, is what else would you like to see, if anything?
So in addition to moving to an informal, I would request from board staff to obtain policies, grading policies from PIMA Medical Institute, staffing policies if they exist, as well as expectations of clinical students in relation to how students in rotation 1, 2, or 3, how they are graded or evaluated based upon final exams, attendance at clinical, SOAPs, whatever else. I don't know.
So we have a motion, and I think we have a second, to go to an informal interview. Is there anything that anyone else feels they need to see? I think with those things,
I don't care about whatever this other...
I really just want to be able to talk.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor of moving this to an informal interview, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
So the board has sent this to another level of review. You'll receive notice, something else about that. It's probably not going to be in August because of the time frame. It'll probably be the September meeting. Okay.
But they'll have a time and a place.
Yeah. Our meetings occur the third Thursday of every month. And we'll start at 9, so if you want to pencil that in, you'll receive a notification with all that information in it. They've asked for some more information, which we'll reach out and try to get from PMI. Thank you for coming down today. Appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Okay, it is 9:30, so I'm going to go back to 3C, and the board will call the case of Rowene Autoway, case 2019-RCE-0048. And it is now 9:32 on July 18, 2019, and this is the time set for the formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners in case number 2019-RCE-0048. She is not here. I am Tracy Kagan, and I'm chair of the board.
Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Thank you. You know what I was thinking.
Kathy Veneer, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Dr. Leslie Easley, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
And counsel for the state can introduce herself.
Attorney General Brittany Schaffer, attorney for the state.
Thank you. This is an administrative hearing before the board, and we will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so the statements can be recorded, and only one person may speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witnesses first and offer documents as evidence, and the chair will rule on the admissibility of the evidence. Licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness. If board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents all its witnesses, licensee will present his or her witness, I guess her in this case, and may offer documents as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call other witnesses. The state may cross-examine each witness, and licensee may then ask additional questions to the witness. Board members may then ask questions to witness. And if board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. Each party can make a brief closing statement, and after the closing statement, the board will deliberate to make a decision. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair. The state's ready to proceed. Okay. Factual allegation states that on February 12, 2019, RCP Rowene Autoway was randomly selected for an audit of her continuing education units pursuant to her submitting an application for renewal of her license. The evidence will show that board staff notified Ms. Autoway of the audit failure on March 26th at her last known address of record and last known email address. Ms. Autoway responded to the audit request and submitted 0 hours of evidence of having obtained 20 continuing education units during her designated renewal period of February 18, 2017 to February 28, 2019, and has therefore failed the continuing education audit for failing to provide the board staff with evidence that she obtained the minimum amount of CEU during the requested audit period required to maintain her licensure. At this time, the state would like to call Jack Comfort.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Confer, what is your occupation?
I'm the executive director for the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care.
And as part of your duties as executive director, do you investigate application files and complaints about professional conduct?
Yes, I do.
How long have you been the board executive director?
Since January of 2012.
Was the notice for today's hearing sent to Rowene Autoway at her last known address of record?
Yes, it was.
Can you please turn to page 3 of the exhibit? Is this the notice that you mailed out?
It is.
And it was sent by certified amateur mail? was a certified notice of hearing returned to the board unclaimed or unfavorable?
It was returned as unclaimed, unable to forward.
Was the regular mail returned?
It was not.
And how about the notice sent by email?
It was not returned either.
How did this matter come to the board's attention?
We conducted an audit of continuing education after she renewed her license, which was the board policy that started in January of 2019.
And you yourself conducted the investigation?
I did.
Can you please turn to Exhibit B that begins on page 21? Do you recognize the document?
My numbers are not matching.
255. Exhibit B for us is 255.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
And what is it?
This is the investigative summary report regarding this particular matter.
And you wrote this report?
I did.
Is this a true and correct copy of your investigation report?
It is.
What are the requirements of a CE audit?
The requirements are that anybody renewing their license must have had 20 hours of continuing education within their renewal time frame. That 20 hours must consist of at least 15, 5 live hours, 2 hours of ethics, and the rest of the 15 hours can be internet-based, live, or ethics.
And why does the board conduct an audit?
Basically, it's they have determined that the 20 hours of continuing education are the reason, are the mandate for continuing competency within the industry over their 2-year renewal time frame. So when a licensee renews every 2 years, hopefully they have 20 hours that are going to keep them up on updates in the industry, new equipment, new trends, and also to review and make sure that the basic skills and competencies there.
If you turn to Exhibit C, which for me, I'm sorry, page 25.
259 for us.
Do you recognize this document?
I do.
What is it?
This is the response to the complaint notice of hearing that was sent out to RCP Ottaway.
And this is a true and correct copy of the response that was filed by Ms. Ottaway?
It is.
What was Ms. Ottaway's response to the allegations?
Basically, in summary, do you want me to read the response? The response, I'm going to read it into the record. The response is dated June 11th, 2019. She states, this response is in regards to a notice of public hearing regarding continuing education CEUs for license renewal. This will be the one and only time I will respond to the allegations. From this point forward, I will consider the matter over and done with. I will not be taking off any work to attend your board meeting in regards to this matter. It would simply be a repeat of information I received over the phone with Jack Confort, Executive Director. I have not practiced respiratory therapy anywhere since 2013. I have no prospects during any respiratory care in doing any respiratory care in the future. I simply wanted to maintain my license. Currently, I make as much or more as I did as a respiratory technician. I lack any desire to practice in the medical field. I resent your claim that I falsely obtained all 20 hours of continuing education for renewal of my license. I sent in 20 CEUs on work I completed. Unfortunately, approximately 20 days too early according to your standards. Mind you, I assumed I had all of 2017 through 2018 to complete any units needed for the renewal of my license. I was never aware of any certain duties within those months to begin obtaining CEUs. However, I resent your stating I committed fraud basically to renew my license. It's not in my nature to be dishonest. You'll have to just take my word on that. Permission granted to revoke my license. The sad thing is I wasted $153 for a license that no longer that I no longer have. May I suggest you buy lunch for everyone at the board meeting using my $153 non-refundable license fee? I no longer care about respiratory therapy or the board or their findings. I consider this matter closed at this point. Sincerely, RCP Berwyn, Ottawa.
You please turn to Exhibit D, and read at page 29. I'm not sure where you guys are at.
62.
Please turn to Exhibit D. Do you recognize this document?
Yes.
What is it?
This is a screenshot of our RCE database.
Okay.
And it reflects the renewal application.
And is this a true and correct copy of that database capture of the renewal application?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. So please scoot further to, I guess, maybe page 266-ish for you. Page 35 for me. Or page 32 for me. I apologize. What question does the application ask of a licensee regarding their continuing education?
It basically asks, it provides an oath and affirmation that they've completed 20 hours of continuing education within the prior 2 years, which is considered their renewal time frame.
And how did Ms. Ottaway respond to that question on the application?
She affirmed it by saying, yes, I've completed 20 hours of continuing education.
We turn to Exhibit E.
269.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is our internal checklist for continuing education audits.
Okay, and is it a true and correct copy of your checklist for
yes.
the audit?
Yes, it is.
What was Ms. Ottaway's audit period?
It was from February 18th of 2017 through February 28th of 2019.
So audit period is good for the licensure period, correct? The two-year licensure period?
It's generally very close to that. The renewal time frame is the time that they filed their last renewal application to the expiration of their license. So in this particular case, it's actually a little more than 2 years.
And looking through, could you confirm that all of Ms. Ottaway's certificates were actually submitted between January 29, 2017 and February 2017?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Could you confirm whether or not the certificates that she submitted in response to the audit were actually obtained between January 29th and February 17th of 2017?
Yes.
And that would be prior to when her licensure period would have begun.
That is correct. So the CE, generally the CE that she submitted was from the prior renewal time frame, which was 3 to 4 years ago.
And the reason you don't accept those is that because you're not able to tell whether or not she used those certificates on a prior renewal?
No, they are out of the time frame, meaning when she renewed her license in 2017, these are the certificates that she would have used to renew her license back in 2017.
The state has nothing further for Mr. Conford, and at this time I make a motion to admit the evidence.
So moved. And board members, do you have any questions for the witness? Okay. And it appears Ms. Ottaway is still not present. One last final call. I do not see her here. So the board will now deliberate. And after a formal hearing, the board may take any of the following action. Dismiss the case, issue non-disciplinary letter of concern, issue a non-disciplinary order of continuing education, adopt findings of facts, conclusions of law, and take disciplinary action, issue a decree of censure, impose probation, restrict practice, suspend a license, or revoke a license. Discussion or a motion from the board members?
A motion to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
A motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion on that?
So just to clarify, you're adopting the, do you want to include the parties in jurisdiction?
And factual allegations.
And the factual allegations and the alleged violations. Are you doing them together?
I'll do it all together.
Okay, so do you want to restate your motion?
I will amend my motion to... Motion to accept the jurisdictional statements and factual allegations contained in the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
Thank you. We have a motion.
Second.
A second and an additional second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, that motion passes. And
thanks.
Now on to any discipline.
I motion for revocation of licensure.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We'll do a roll call vote, please.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Dr. Leslie Easley, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Hagan, aye. Motion passes. Thank you, everybody. Okay, we are going to kind of stay where we are. 9:45 was our next one in this grouping. And so the board will now call the case of Amanda Parson, case 2019-RCE-0050. And I will go back to this paper.
Do we have a motion to do this?
We do, yes. All right, so this is the date and time set and place where the matter dealing with, Amanda Parson is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners. It appears she is not here. Going once, going twice, okay. The state filed a motion asking the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted pursuant to ARS 32-3553-K. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to the determination of the appropriate discipline in light of the violation. The state will present a brief statement, and now we know a summary, to the board and its request, and then the respondent, if present, can address the board. The parties should limit their remarks to issues presented in the motion, including the time and manner of service of the complaint and whether respondent filed a timely answer. If the respondent did not timely file an answer, the respondent should explain the reason for doing so.
Okay. Factual allegation in case number 2019-RCE-0050. Is that on January 29th, 2019, RCP Amanda Parson was randomly selected for an audit of her continuing education unit pursuant to her application for license renewal. Board staff notified Ms. Parson of the audit failure on March 26th at her last known address of record and last known email address. Ms. Parson did not respond to the audit request and submitted no evidence of having attended any units during her designated renewal period of January 30th, 2017 to January 30th, 2019. Thus, she has failed the continuing education audit and failed to provide board staff with evidence that she obtained a minimum amount of CE during the requested audit period required to maintain her license. State filed a motion to deem the allegations admitted in this case on July 3rd, being the materials. The state board has the statutory authority to impose discipline pursuant to the allegations completed in the, contained in the complaint notice of hearing if the licensee fails to respond within 30 days of being properly served. ARS 32-3553-K provides that a licensee shall respond in writing to the board within 30 days after notice of the hearing is served as described in subsection J of this section. The board may then consider a licensee's failure to respond within this time as an admission by default to the allegations stated within the complaint. The board may then take any disciplinary action without conducting a hearing. Board staff mailed a copy of the complaint notice of hearing in this case to respondent on May 28th via U.S. Postal Service certified mail with return receipt requested by regular mail to respondent's address of record with the board and by electronic mail to respondent's most current email address. Service process was complete on May 28, 2019. Certified mailing has not been claimed by respondents. The document sent via U.S. postal mail to respondents' address of record and any materials that were previously sent to respondent via U.S. mail were also returned to the board as undeliverable. The documents sent as attachments to respondent by email were not returned as undeliverable, and at least on one occasion she has responded to an email from the state stating she had received the exhibits. When a certified mail notice is returned unclaimed, the state must take additional reasonable steps to attempt to provide notice. One reasonable step might be for the state to send the notice by regular mail because regular mail requires no signature and can be left at the address, increasing the odds of actual notice. Your board staff not only sent the notice by regular mail that went beyond reasonable measures by also sending the notice by email. The state was required to take additional reasonable steps in this case, but the state was not required to conduct an open-ended search of government records or the local phone book. Licensees are required to timely update their address with the board, according to AACR 445-104B, which provides that a licensee shall notify the board within 10 days after a change in the licensee's address of record. Further, ARS 41-1092-04 states that each party to an administrative action shall afford the agency in the office of any change of address within 5 days. In this case, board staff filed a complaint that is appearing to respondent's address off record on file with the board via certified and regular mail. Respondent has not provided the board with an updated address since at least January 30th, 2019, the date on which respondent filed her application for renewal of licensure with the board and provided this specific address. Thus, respondent was properly noticed of the formal hearing and as of July 3rd has failed to respond to the complaint within 30 days. Therefore, the state respectfully requests that the parties of jurisdictional and factual allegations and alleged violations stated in the complaint notice of hearing be deemed admitted and the board take disciplinary action without conducting a hearing today.
Okay, thank you. At this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. Board members?
I motion to grant the dean.
We have a motion. We have a motion to grant motion to deem.
Yes.
Second.
And a second. Discussion. All in favor of granting that motion to deem, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. That motion passes.
Now, do I do the last part, too?
Excuse me?
Do I do the next part, too?
Go right ahead. You're on a roll.
I motion that we accept the jurisdictional statements and factual allegations contained in the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and to adopt the alleged violations as conclusions of law.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. And that motion passes. And now we move on to the disciplinary.
I motion for revocation of licensure.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We will do a roll call vote, please.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Anthony Lanier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Dr. Leslie Easley, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. And that motion passes. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Madam Chair, so for purposes of the people attending here, that was a complaint in notice of hearing because somebody renewed her license. They got audited. We did not send in any continuing education in response to the audit, and we had very limited response. So somebody renewed their license, got audited, failed to respond to the audit, failed to respond to the complaint, failed to respond to the complaint and notice of hearing, does not hear and have their license revoked. So they paid $153 to renew their license and got revoked because it didn't comply with the audit. So that's just a quick fact time.
I was going because I think we're going to have time between the 10:30 and I was going to do the call to public and talk about that very same thing.
Okay.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. Right.
Because that's a huge thing we're seeing now is licenses being revoked because you're not doing your CEUs. I just don't understand it. But we can talk about that later. Okay. So we're going to move back to the agenda and we're going to go back to 3D because, again, I have things at certain times. And we will call the case of Jonathan Watson, case 2019-RCE-0125. What page?
469.
Oh, yeah, right on. Thank you.
469.
She's going to be back at 9:30. Okay. I'm like, wait, we have another.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is a case against RCP Jonathan Watson. This is a failed continuing education audit. RCP Watson was audited for continuing education after his license renewal. His license renewal time frame was March 6th of 2017 to March 25th of 2019. He did not respond to the audit, and we have not received any continuing education. RCP Watson has prior action in his licensing history for failing a prior continuing education audit and then failing to comply with that audit, with that order, non-disciplinary order, and then the board subsequently issued a decree of censure of disciplinary action for failing to comply with the non-disciplinary order for continuing education. He eventually, after the decree of censure, he did comply with the original non-disciplinary order, and that was terminated for compliance. He has not responded to this one at this time. I don't have anything further.
Okay.
We can't just move to revocation.
No.
So my first question is, on this page on 469, I'm assuming the final line there is just a typo.
Yes.
if it's just a...
That is an accurate assumption.
Okay. My second, I just want to make sure I'm clear, that the last time he renewed his license, we had this very same issue. And yes. Now this time, we have the very same issue we had last time. Okay, now I'm clear. I was already clear.
Do we have a current employer from him? Is he working?
I'm sorry?
Is he working?
We don't know.
Okay. And to answer your question, Alan, no, I think Franky's opposed to going straight to a formal hearing.
Madam Chair, Dr. Easley, the renewal application, you just jogged my memory. The renewal application indicated he was working as a mail carrier in the West Valley. So if he's working as a respiratory therapist, we're not aware of it.
But he did renew his license.
He renewed his license.
Said he had the CEUs. And now
affirmed under oath that he had to continue education. At this point in time, the thing is that he has not responded to the audit, and he has not complied with the audit.
Yep. Okay.
This is not the first time this has happened.
This is the second time in a row.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
What are our options?
Well, at this point,
well, you can go to an informal interview is your next step. However, if you do feel that the case merits suspension or immediate suspension or revocation, we can move it straight to a formal hearing. It's your choice.
I'd like to move it straight to a formal hearing.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to go straight to a formal. I thought she was going to be opposed to that. Yeah. Any discussion on that?
It's the second one in a row.
Right.
And so the first one, that's one thing. You go to an informal, you have a conversation. But if this is the second one in a row, if this is repeat behavior.
Yep. All in favor of going to a formal, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And that motion passes.
Madam Chair, can I ask her, this is Attorney General, quick questions?
Sure.
Do you feel that given the disciplinary history, non-disciplinary history, and non-compliance with this, mean this rises to any type of emergency action?
I do not. Okay. It's a technical foul.
Okay.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, so because our next case isn't scheduled until 10:30, I'm going to go 3F, and that's going to be the Executive Director's Report. So, Jack, that is you. What? Oh, it is one. That's you.
I have lost my...
Jesus.
There it is. Oh, yeah.
I wish we could.
Page number we on here.
499.
I feel like there's a lot of applications pending.
Maybe Kathy can comment on that. Kathy?
Yes.
Application report.
Wow.
Do we really have applications pending since January of this year?
Yes, because they have 7 months to go ahead and complete their application packets. So sometimes we're waiting on their fingerprints, sometimes we're waiting for them to pass their RRT. That can be true. So there are 124 pending. And this month we went ahead and we issued 38. Once again, we had five fee waivers, which three were approved. There's one application that's a late application that's still pending. There was three that were approved. Applications that were more than 7 months, there were seven of those that closed because they weren't completed. And one person actually withdrew. On our other report, the licensing time frame.
Can I ask a quick question going
sure.
back up to the lapsed licenses? So for these, do they sign an affidavit or anything indicating that they have not worked?
No. Well, hold on. Let me qualify your question.
So if somebody, if a license lapses, they have 90 days to renew.
60 days
to renew that license. Otherwise, the license file closes. If it's a late renewal, they have to renew within that 60-day time frame. That's when they're required to complete the affidavit telling us whether they've worked or not. If they never renew, the license is closed in 60 days. And
I just meant for like this license that was renewed on June 28th. If their license expired June 20th,
yes.
Do they sign an affidavit saying I did not work from June 21st to June 27th?
Correct. So all late renewal applications, they are processed with an affidavit. They're also required to send in their 20 hours of continuing education.
Thank you.
And one or two of those, actually, they work a day or two, so you'll see those cases coming up in the future.
Thank you.
Is it flagged on the website pretty quickly when these people, their licenses aren't renewed or they don't?
It's real time. So as soon as the, for example, if somebody is, somebody's birthday is today, the license, our license website will reflect that it's on renewed, not active tomorrow at 12:00 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, thank you.
It's a real time update. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. Nope.
It was me, sorry.
On our licensing time frame, we had a total of 38 licenses that were issued, and the average number of days for the administrative completeness was 3. The substantive review time frame was 1, with an overall time frame of 4. During this time, usually we're all at 1s, but we had some staff that was on vacation, so we put a little bit
over there.
No,
she was on vacation.
It wasn't me. And of the 2 late licenses, again, their average for their administrative completeness was 1 day, substantive review was 1 day, and the overall time frame was 2.
We have the reports as far as case status and compliance are getting more and more reformed as time goes. So the idea behind the case status report is to give you all the open cases within a couple days of the meeting, and then it gives you an agent report, which refers directly back to the time frame that we have to complete investigations. So as of yesterday, we had a total of 35 open cases. All the consent agreements on the beginning of the agenda have been updated, so those 20 or 25 are not on this report and have already been closed. You have a couple the high priority cases. So the priorities determine how quickly I try to get the information to you. A high priority, I should have it to you within 30 days. Medium is 60 days. And low is within 90 days. So we have a couple up the top there that you'll see at the next meeting, which are starting to age a little. I'm not concerned about the case with the 149-day time frame. It's a self-reported DUI, and the criminal court is handling it, had a low BAC on it. So I'm not concerned with that, but you should see that next month's meeting, as well as probably about the oldest 10 to 15 there. You can already recognize some of the names on there that you heard and are dealing with today. Anybody have any questions on the time frame? Report investigations.
Can I ask a question on page 507?
Sure.
The end date column, there's items in here dated in 2018. What does that mean?
So, compliance, basically that, this is the compliance report. So when you issue an order, whether it's disciplinary, non-disciplinary, whether it's probation, completing continuing education, This report is intended to be used by staff to say this is the deadline for the compliance in that particular case.
That you have to send the report by or the order by?
That the licensee has to comply with the order.
So what happened in this case dated April 2018?
April 2018.
That's on page 508.
I'd have to pull it. I don't recall what that case is, but so every time, so what I've been doing with this is the new Salesforce system. We never had an electronic compliance, so when I issue an order, I close the case out, I go in, and I put dates in for compliance. The stack, so the lowest priority for me right now is compliance with orders. Fortunately, I have a stack on my desk, continuing education, civil penalties that people have completed, which have not yet been updated in the system. So,
Mike,
go ahead.
I appreciate that, and thank you. My concern would be is that if we issued this order back in April of 2018, it's been a year, and it's been over a year, and I don't know if this RCP is compliant or not.
Agreed. It's a matter of me managing time. Do you want the time on the front end with the investigations and community education on it? Or, I mean, it should be updated. I don't disagree with you. For me and my workload right now, this is the low priority.
I just wish there was an easier way to hold RCPs accountable to
the
following orders.
The process is that if they haven't complied by the time frame that is on the order, we open a complaint.
So there's potentially a lot of complaints coming. I'm at 514, and all of these dates on page 514 are dated 2018. The last two are not.
And again, you have to understand that I am, on a weekly basis, entering this stuff into the system. It's not an excuse. It is the priority that I've been putting on is on the front end with the investigations, getting things to you as far as the community education on it. It's a matter of hands. I have a feeling 75% of this will go away when all the continuing education and civil penalties are entered. I understand your concern about the time frame. The other ones in here that you will see, we have one or two probations. I'm not going to be able to identify, I don't think. You have about five people that are on standard rehabs. So what you're not seeing in this compliance report is the fact that they're getting their drug testing done, they're submitting quarterly reports, that sort of thing. I can figure out a way to give you updates on that if you want to see it on a regular basis or a quarterly basis. The whole reason for this is tracking, and the reason for the tracking is exactly what your concern is.
And it would be nice to know for those that have kind of ongoing, orders that they have to comply with, like maybe on a quarterly basis, are people compliant? And I think that ties up a loose end, especially some of these orders last a year or two,
I agree 100%.
We could clone you and then two of you.
I'm not sure that I'm the best subject for cloning.
I mean, I could look into that for you.
Yeah. Let me work on it. There's other fields and I'm learning the reporting function of Salesforce. So there's other fields that may help better describe what the compliance is, what needs to be done. So let me work on it.
Thank you.
So you think that 75% of these will drop off once it's updated?
Yeah.
So is it a matter of just having somebody do
come to the computer and update it?
It's, I don't know. I mean, So let me go through this. It's time. It's my time.
Jack, how long have we been using the new system? This new Salesforce, how long have we been
under? For a little under a year.
Okay.
We've been using the back end.
And then as far as the reporting, though, how long? Is this
third or fourth month that I'm starting to use it? Yeah.
Oh, so it's only been 3 months, 3 to 4 months.
So would it be fair to state, sir, that then it's going to take a little time to get caught up?
Thank you, Governor. That was very well said, and maybe I should. And that's what it is. It's a catch up. But I'm entering it so that we capture the data, so that if I get hit by a bus or something like that, there's legacy here. Somebody else can pick it up and run with it. That's not bad. But you never know.
So. I appreciate the insight into the. It's great to have this information that allows us to see what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool.
As far as the tweaks though and stuff, it's my understanding that the changes can be made to the system to the extent that the board wants to see things changed in the report, and I guess that we have the money to pay for the changes, right? So
you hit the nail on the head, so to speak, because when I get into the legislation, all the new requirements for legislation, money is key. I mean, we've got so many unfunded mandates that are associated with Salesforce and our licensing and reporting to the governor's office that I'm not sure what we're going to do. So, yes, on the point. Did I answer your question?
You did.
Did I sufficiently talk around it? What else? Anything else in there? If you scroll down, apparently that's what I was looking for. So, like on page 518 of the compliance audit report, it will show you how many hours are due. The system will, the compliance system will allow you to update if 1 hour is sent in and there's only 5 remaining. It's also tracking the amount of civil penalties that are due. So I'm using the Salesforce system to track compliance. When somebody has complied with all portions of the order, then we generate what's called a termination order, send it to them, it shows that they've complied with it. So if they're doing credentialing in a hospital or a new job, they can use that termination order to show that they've complied with the provisions of the consent agreement or order that we've issued.
There's a lot of civil penalties to be paid.
There are a lot of civil penalties.
Well, then all the consents we just did.
Yeah, so like, I don't know if you can see on, so here's data entry here. So if you look on page 523, about 3/4 of the way down to the bottom, there's check number 2553 for 375. That means that they paid for it. And that particular civil penalty payment is not updated correctly in Salesforce because it's still showing as due.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we can do some more with reporting and show you some more highlights and follow up on some of the board orders on a periodic basis.
Okay. All right, your next item?
That's Sentinel 1062. This is a statute I included in here. I just want to give you a brief summary of what to expect. It is a requirement for the board to exclude issuing licensees' residential address from public information reports. So this particular statute says that if the agency receives a public information request or a list, requesting a list of all licensees and an address and email address, this and their address of record is their home address, it allows the licensee to opt out of that public disclosure of their address.
So, for example,
If the AZSRC was to contact the board saying we would like to get a list of all email or mailing addresses for all licensed respiratory therapists in the state to inform them of our upcoming conference.
Or election.
Or elections. The RCP can elect not to participate or not have their address distributed.
Mailing address, but what about email?
Essentially, yes. And yes, it excludes them from public disclosure of that residential address.
Right now, there's the current practice for the whole state is that if your address of record is your residential address, that's public record once you file an application with any board. So when there's a public records request, if that's the only address you've provided, that's what we have to give up. We can't even redact it.
Yeah.
So this is offering an extra layer of privacy protection. If you have a work address, if you provide your two different addresses, we'll always use the business address if that's what you elected to use as your...
No, I like it.
But Senate Bill 1062 is saying that an RCP could choose to have their address not disclosed.
That is not currently an option.
Okay.
If that's the only address you've given us, that's the address we have to give up.
Okay.
What some boards have done in the past, because it is kind of a privacy issue, is they'll give the licensees maybe an option to give us a work address or a P.O. box instead before it's released. But this is the fix. This is
right.
A permanent fix.
Yes.
The issue, so that's new statute is going to be effective probably September sometime. This is unfunded. We got no money to fix any of our databases to comply with the statute. So that means that we have to use money from our current fiscal year, which was approved a year ago, to address this particular statute. So that's going to be a funding issue. I have no idea how we're doing it. I haven't even reached out to Ascent or anybody else to figure out what the fix is if they're working on this on a... It's not a function. We don't have the time to do this by hand in the office right now. We just don't. So
right.
Hopefully we can get it programmed. So that's 1062.
Okay.
Senate Bill, what's that? Senate Bill 1096.
Your microphone's on.
What's that?
Microphone is
trying to
be crazy. Somebody's microphone is driving me crazy.
Senate Bill 10. Is everybody awake? Okay. Senate Bill 1096. This is this one actually might have some funding attached to it through DHS, but DHS has been made the owner of the Healthcare Professionals Workforce Data Repository. What I assume is going to happen is they want to do studies on healthcare workforce entry, leaving the state, where they're working, how many hours they're working. It's something that's been around for quite a few years. They've actually done a database now where DHS may have gotten some funding to be the repository for information in our databases. And it's going to be on licensees, where they're working, how many hours are working, full-time, part-time, that sort of thing. We have not received any money to comply with this particular mandate, but I assume what might probably happen is either DHS is going to try to do it themselves, or they're going to reach out to Asset and find out if Asset can put together the transfer of data between the health-related boards and DHS to comply with that statute. Again, unfunded mandate. House Bill 2118. I had touched upon this last meeting. I have to review policies and bring a new policy on licensed activity. the thing about this, the expansion of this, is this was somewhat generated by the dental board, where they had may have issued a license to somebody that may not have had the right credentials. This statute is to make sure that we're not issuing licenses to people that don't have the credentials or that may or may not be working on license. So we need to review our current policy, come up with a new policy, and make sure that's in place.
Do we have, I don't feel that we have that problem. The license is issued upon receipt of your RRT credential.
So there are some loose ends that we probably need to fill. One of the common things that I hear, and I don't know about you, Kathy, when we receive an initial application for licensure, somebody may already be working for a healthcare institution or hospital in a different capacity. So they've graduated from school, they're working there.
Okay.
They have a supervisor report. You know, they're working in the cardiology department. Okay?
Yeah, but they're not working as an RT.
How do we know that?
Because aren't they credentialed? Do they have a license?
That's the loose end that needs to be tied up. No, they don't have a license yet. But do we actually know that what capacity they're working?
But we're not over their jurisdiction if they're not licensed by this board.
This particular statute brings those particular individuals that may be working under a jurisdiction, and we can now issue a cease and desist order
to
tell them to stop.
I like that.
So, the other thing that I've seen happen in our industry a lot is that they show up for work on Monday, their license expired on Saturday, and the supervisor puts them on light duty.
We see that.
Unfortunately, if you're in a respiratory therapy position, that's your job title.
Sleep.
You're putting money in your pocket under that job description.
As a respiratory therapist.
You are practicing the profession of respiratory care. So there are some things that we need to explain and tighten up a little in our policy, and maybe some of the information on the website.
Sorry, you heard it on
the
or something.
Right, so we're
practicing as a therapist.
Okay,
yes.
Let's see. House Bill 2660.
I don't know what 2660 is.
Petition for review of criminal record annual report.
It's not on, what's that?
2660 is not on our agenda unless it falls into something else.
It's under legislation update.
Just all that.
Yeah,
okay,
so.
All right. Just making sure.
This is just the reason I put this in here is that it kind of clarifies what needs to be reported on anybody with an application for an occupational license. This board has not traditionally denied licenses to people that have past criminal convictions. This clarifies if we get into that situation where the board is contemplating denying that license, you get some parameters on how they need to address that conviction and so forth. Are you familiar with this statute? Okay. I don't have
one. It's always a clear and convincing standard, so it has to be directly related to the profession, the conviction list.
And then House Bill 2086. Again, these are all, we need to update some policy procedure, but they're all unfunded. This next one is a big one as far as funding and impact to the agency. I mentioned this before. This is the temporary license one.
Mm-hmm.
So we had temporary licensing with a little different parameters. This one allows us to issue a temporary license, a short-term temporary license, to somebody that has applied for license, it's not yet licensed, and allows them to work between the time of the application and when they get their permanent license from us. This is the statute, the authorizing statute. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to look to us yet. I don't know. It's definitely not going to be by parole temporary where we issue it to a new graduate right out of school. This is more for somebody that's already licensed in another state. And it can be issued in three different manners. If somebody's coming into Arizona on a short-term basis to teach a course, seminar class, to work during the process of receiving a full or active license, or work while traveling with a sports or athletic team. This statute, I believe, when I read it, allows us to charge a fee for that temporary license and application. It may require a separate application, but it doesn't. It may require us to do some rule writing to put it in place. So temporary licenses are coming back. The board will be part of the decision on how to implement that time frames and whether or not we need rules. Do you have anything to add to that on that one? House Bill 2463. This is another unfunded mandate. This mandates that we put a notice about occupational regulations on our website and on our applications. Again, it's an unfunded mandate. We're probably going to have to pay some money to get our Salesforce system updated, pay somebody to put this on all the applications. I haven't asked for a quote and don't know how much it's going to cost. But it's going to require us to do all the electronic applications, change our website, change all the physical applications to include this notice. So that's a quick rundown of statutes that we have to work on between now and the end of the year.
Okay.
I included a confidential memorandum from, I never know, is it Talier or Talier? Talier. From John Talier, who's the section chief on House Bill 2569. If the board wishes to discuss this, we need to go into an executive session, but it's basically advice, it's confidential legal advice to the agency about how to implement House Bill 2569. And House Bill 2569 is basically the governor's platform of occupational licensing. The governor's office is promoting that this is a new licensing pathway for people to be able to become licensed in Arizona. This is your assistant attorney general, the office of the attorney general's legal advice and how to implement it. You're going to be seeing more from staff on implementation of this in the next 30, probably no more than 60 days. I can tell you, I'm not talking about the memorandum, the new pathway for occupational licensing, you've probably seen some press on it. It requires residency in Arizona. None of our statutes or rules regarding licensing require that right now.
How's that going to work for travelers?
Again, so the impact on us is probably going to be minimal because we don't require residency to license somebody.
Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that.
So
we
don't require it. But the mandates come down from the executive branch that they want this presented as a new licensing pathway. They're already talking about metrics and reporting to the governor's office. They've already reached out to Asset. And again, this is an unfunded mandate. They want us to do all these things.
This is for licensed outside of this. Already have a license outside of Arizona.
Correct.
And then you relocate to Arizona and you want to get a license.
Correct.
Reciprocity.
This reciprocity thing.
What's that?
Similar to reciprocity.
Yes.
I'm not.
If you're a traveler in Nevada and you're licensed in Nevada and you want to come to Arizona, you'll have to show proof of residency prior to us issuing
your license. Well, don't we have a temporary license that allows you to function on a current license because you're waiting to get a permanent license?
That's another statute.
Right. It's, yeah.
Yes.
Residency.
I'm advising.
We have many pathways.
I'm advising.
So confusing.
I'm advising my board of staff.
What's going on, right?
I don't pretend to understand the logic of it. We have a statute that we have to comply with. It requires residency. I'm not sure why.
Does it require residency to get a temporary?
No.
So when we start getting this put into place as far as our licensing, electronic applications of licensing our website, I'll bring you more on it.
But in order for our standards, we don't have to lower the standards we currently have in place based on the rules we have in place.
They have to meet our...
They have to meet our standards.
The language is same practice level.
Okay.
I am waiting on a little more information on the RRT versus CRT with the different states, but the language is the same practice level.
It's clear to me from what I've, even from the governor's office, that the direction is not, we're establishing a different scope of practice. So while these mandates are coming in, our position will probably be, unless there's something different, you have to hold or have held your RRT credential in the future to get licensed here. I don't see that changing. I don't see it's going backwards.
Right. Okay. That was my concern. So, Jack, does that take you through F, 1, 2, and 3? Because I'm going to change agenda spots in a moment, but I want to make sure I know where we are.
Yes.
You did not.
M4.
Okay. So, five, so we would come back to 5.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. We are going to go back in the agenda because it is 10:30 or later. Yep. And we will do 3C, and the board will call the case of Joseph Ricchetti, case 2019-RCE-0057.
He's here.
Joseph Ricchetti is here. Okay, so I go to just a regular formal stop now. Okay. Okay. It is now 10:32 a.m. on July 18th, 2019, and this is the time set for the formal hearing before the Arizona Board of Respiratory Care Examiners in a case regarding Joseph Ricchetti, case 2019-RCE-0057. Mr. Ricchetti, are you represented by counsel?
No.
Okay, would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Joseph David Ricchetti. I'm a respiratory therapist at North Mountain, currently a caregiver.
Okay, and you don't have an attorney, you said. Okay, so I am Tracy Kagan, I'm chair of the board, and the other board members will introduce themselves.
Jose Gonzalez, vice chair.
Matthew Rainier, board member.
Alan Crawford, board member.
Dr. Leslie Easley, board member.
Michael Beller, board member.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, just for the record, because you have counsel for the state, I am the independent advisor for the board for this proceeding, Mary Williams from the Attorney General's Office.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This is the administrative hearing before the board, and we will use the following procedures. All persons who speak must speak loudly and clearly so their statements can be recorded. Only one person may speak at a time. To begin the hearing, each side may make a brief opening statement. The state will call its witness first and may offer documents as evidence. The chair will rule on admissibility of evidence. Licensee may then cross-examine each witness, and the state may ask additional questions. Board members may then ask questions of the witness. If board members question a witness, the parties may ask additional questions. After the state presents its witnesses, licensee will present his witness and may offer documents as evidence. Licensee may testify as a witness and may call other witnesses. The state may cross-examine each witness, and licensee may ask additional questions of the witness. Board members may then ask questions of the witness. If board members ask a question to the witness, the parties may ask additional questions. Each party may make a closing argument, and after closing arguments, the board will deliberate and make a decision. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair. The state's ready to proceed.
Madam Chair.
Frankie Schleifer,
Attorney for
the state.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I would I want to ask, and I don't know if this is an appropriate time, I want to ask if he has the CE that he was short.
No, I don't.
Can I ask that before you start the hearing?
To see if maybe the hearing's not necessary?
Yes, correct. We offered a consent agreement to resolve this, and I was curious as if he had additional CE that might provide compliance with the audit, or if he wanted to sign the consent agreement at this point in time instead of going forward with the hearing.
I don't know.
Hang on a second. I was asking our attorney.
If it's okay with the chair, Mr. Comper asks that question.
Or do you want to go ahead and proceed with the
hearing? It's okay with me if you ask him.
So, you okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were short a couple hours of CE, and you don't have those?
No.
Okay.
That's just yes or no.
Did you want to sign the consent agreement, or do you want to try to explain circumstances of the board? I haven't heard from you.
That's right.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
You can resolve this with the same consent agreement that we offered.
Okay.
If you want to do that, or they can go through the hearing and they may or may not have the same resolution to the allegations.
Right. Would it maybe be helpful if the state's attorney and Mr. Reed just take a 5 minutes to talk?
Okay.
So that he understands what we have.
Do I call a recess?
Yes, please.
Okay, we will take a 5 minute recess.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, board members, you ready?
Yes.
We are ready.
Jack, you ready?
Yep.
All right, we are back in session, and I will ask you if you came to an agreement or we're going to proceed.
Yes, the state would like to request that the board offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement for the original one that was offered for 5 live CE and 175 civil penalty. The only discrepancy, the reason that he came down, is he would like 6 months to pay instead of to complete the unit instead of 3 months.
So moved.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to accept the agreement and offer the consent.
It would be offered. We haven't drafted it yet.
Okay.
We drafted it yet.
Okay.
So can you just state the terms?
So the terms would be $175 civil penalty.
$25 per missing unit.
Complete the required CE that is missing, and you have 6 months to pay the civil penalty.
So that is the motion.
And complete the unit?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And it's non-disciplinary?
Yeah. Correct. It's non-disciplinary, and the CE will not count towards his current licensure period.
Okay. So that's your motion.
I agree.
You're okay with that second, so okay.
And just to clarify, the original order was for 7 units. He has completed 2 in the epic, so the only requirement left would be the 5 live and then the $50 civil penalty.
Perfect. He submitted 12 CEs.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right. So we've got a motion and a second. Because we're in a formal, we'll still do a roll call vote, please.
Not necessary.
Oh, she's nodding yes. You're saying no.
Sorry.
Error on the side.
Oh, okay.
I will take the lead.
We'll
roll call.
Jose Gonzalez, aye.
Kathy Rainier, aye.
Alan Crawford, aye.
Dr. Leslie Easley, aye.
Michael Beller, aye.
Tracy Kagan, aye. Thank and that motion passes.
Thank you, board. And does that come back to the board? Or
No, since they're offering it, as long as he accepts it, we'll be there.
If it's not offered, it's not signed.
Yeah.
Then we'll come back for a hearing. Thank you for coming back. Okay, well, that one turned out. All right, so we are going to go back to 3F, continue on with the executive director's report, and pick up at number 5.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
I did not provide the... Apparently, Central Services Bureau was having trouble with APHIS, so the June last month of the fiscal year report was not available. We have about $5,000, $3,000 to $5,000 left over from last fiscal year, which is a little close, but it's about where I want to be. I included, I'm moving on to tab 6, the fiscal year 20 budget. I included that there are some increases over last year's fiscal budget because of increases in square footage for office space, retirement costs went up, and there was one other thing. So we got an additional appropriation to cover those increases.
E-licensing.
e-licensing.
I recall you made a statement that the e-licensing database was going to be a cost that was not budgeted in 2019.
Correct.
So is it budgeted in 2020?
No. No, we asked for... Yes, turn that on. We asked for funding for... So the budget request was a year and a half ago for fiscal year 2020. I had asked for some money for e-licensing, and OSPB denied that. So we have to make do with what we have for this fiscal year. Fiscal year 21 budget is going to be due by September, and I will bring that to you. It will include some appropriation for some of the mandates that we were talking about. That won't start until July of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to ask for funding for e-licensing until we get it, or do we just...
We got to make do with what we have.
I think we can ask. It doesn't mean they're going to bring it.
Yeah. You can ask for... we could ask for money... that would start in basically January 2020, kind of a mid-budget cycle budget request. But that I doubt very much we would get any support from JLBC or OSPB for that. So my recommendation is we work with what we have, we get done what we can with what we have, and ask for it for fiscal year 21. Okay. I mean, we have the revenue for increases, but just the authorization from the legislature or government to spend it is something else.
Okay.
I included monitored number 7, customer satisfaction survey. I did a brief printout from May to present. I don't remember. I think the memory serves about 70-75% on the ones that we receive of excellent, and then it goes down to 2-5% that are not happy with the service that we're getting. What's that?
We can't please everyone.
We try, but no, we can't. So, and we on a daily basis we deal with you know, communication with people in the office. And staff has bad days. I have bad days. So sometimes we're on top of a game, and sometimes we need a little. We have some room for improvement. So
I think your performance has been great.
Thank you.
I have not seen anything month after month that would indicate there's any concern.
Sometimes
I think the people don't get the answer they were hoping to receive.
That's going to turn into a negative result.
Yeah.
For sure. Clearly, you're responding in a timely fashion, and people are very happy. Yeah. I was just going to say, welcome to HCAS. In my HCAS, they're high bad.
I don't have anything. The only thing on number 8 that I have to report to the board is that the board and the Office of Attorney General are going to do a roadshow out at the Wigwam.
No, we're downtown this year.
You're
this year.
So it's a short roadshow.
Downtown Sheraton.
I apologize.
You're in my hood.
So we're going to do a presentation at the Arizona Society of Respiratory Care. I heard that. I was wondering what that was.
What's the date of that?
In the August the 27th and 28th, the Tuesday and a Wednesday.
Yep.
Jack and Frankie will be speaking on the Thursday.
So I'm going to cover new legislation. Frankie's going to cover everything else.
Yeah. And I appreciate all the support that Kathy has been. She's been getting out phone calls, directing people that are calling her.
And staff is thank you.
Part of their craziness at that.
But I believe there will be 4 board members present at that.
There will be 4 board members present at that.
On both days or
on what? Both days.
Okay, so I need to agendize that.
Yeah.
I need to agendize that and post it.
Yes, you do.
Both days?
Yes.
Both,
yeah.
For the Crawford.
Who's going to be there?
The four of us.
Everyone
that's licensed does an RTE.
Right. So you're going to listen to EOs live.
We are going to have staff there available.
Be there, yep.
So people can talk with, we'll have a little table probably, and we'll, our signs and handouts and stuff like that.
We'll put on stuff there without us.
But we're not providing lunch there.
No lunch.
So I don't have anything. I don't have anything further unless there's questions from the board. Does anybody else have any announcements under that agenda item?
Chair, just if you would like to address the audience about CE or anything,
do that in the call to the public.
You cannot address them during the call of the public.
Okay.
That's for the public.
Okay.
So you can do that under a summary of current events, as that has been a current change to
Excellent.
The statute.
Then I will do it right here.
Thank you.
So since we're in a summary of current events, I just am hoping that what you saw today on CEUs was huge. So what you saw were three revocation of licenses because people didn't do their CEUs. That's it. We took their license. They're not practicing now. You saw a consent agreement offered to someone who will pay a civil penalty for not doing CEUs. And then in the allegation section, which was D, three of the four allegations were also for not doing CEUs. What you may not have noticed is way back in the beginning when we approved the consent agenda, and if anyone has an agenda in their hand, if you looked at 2D, where it said discussion on ratification of consent agreements, and there are 25 names there, at quick glance in my documents here, 21 of those 25 were CEUs. People who hadn't done their CEUs and or when they renewed their license said they did their CEUs and then couldn't prove that. CEUs are a requirement. They're not a suggestion. They're not a if you feel like doing it. In order to maintain your license, your professional license that you chose to seek, you must do your CEUs. You must do all of the different categories that are required, and you have to be able to provide it to us whenever it's asked for.
And if you have questions, you contact the board.
Always contact the board. They'll answer any question you have, even if you have the same question that you already asked and you don't understand it. They'd rather answer it again than go behind the scenes. There is so much work on the staff side that goes into getting these cases put together. So much work. For CEUs. They're CEUs. Gotta do them. So I can't ask you if you have any questions on that until we get to the next section, in which case I'll ask you then. So that is my summary of CEUs.
We started CE audits, random CE audits, a little over 4 years ago. That's two renewal cycles for everybody. So the random continuing education audit thing did not work, as evidenced by the number of cases we have for continuing education. The message, this board is going to mandate that you get your CE done in the right number of hours in the right areas, or they're going to take action. That's the policy. I do not see it changing. So the take home is get your CE done. We get a lot of calls on, well, where do I get my 5 live hours? I work in DME or work in this practice setting. The mandate is 5 live hours. Go get an ACLS, go to a Category 1 CME for a PO or an MD, get some good continuing education for 5 hours because the mandate's not going to go away.
Come here. To a conference.
Yeah.
The other thing I just wanted to say is that in the future, right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, board staff, when the license is renewed, I should say in the past, a license was renewed and then CEUs were checked. That's
that's going to change, and CEUs are going to check before you're even getting your renewal license. So gone are the days where we can renew our license at 11:59 p.m. and still go to work the next day. It's not until your CEUs have been approved, checked over, and approved. CEUs are huge. They're not going away. You got to do them. You got to do them. You got to do them. That's our takeaway for CEUs. You have to spread the word. All right, so I will move on to G, which is call to the public. And the call to the public is where we give you 5 minutes should you choose to speak about anything you want to speak about. But we can't have conversation about it because it's not on our agenda. So that's where I was going to talk, and she said I can't talk because that's for you guys. So this is now open to anyone who wants to speak. If you have anything to say, this is your moment. You can stand and just say your name, please.
Okay, so I'm Jan, and this is a question regarding the CEUs. So I have one live credit left. Someone told me it can be done on a webinar for, like, ethics. Is that true?
Jack?
Yes. So let me explain that. So the definition of live is the board came out with a policy. They call it asynchronous, which means that a live class has to be happening at the same time that you're participating in it or viewing it. A webinar, by our definition, is that there is a live instructor on your computer screen or on your TV, whatever device you're using, that is delivering the content at the time that you're watching it, and you can interact with that person while they're delivering content.
It's not pre-recorded.
Yes, thank you. And it's not pre-recorded. So that's not live. And so AERC has several webinars which are live that are time specific. They say you have to be available at this time to get this continuing education. So if that's the case, it's a webinar and it's asynchronous, it's happening at the same time that you're watching it, that's good. That's good live continuing education. I don't understand. In the past, live, the board really never checked live since we've had the mandate. And a lot of people got into the rhythm, the habit of just doing stuff online. That's not the way it is anymore. So, did I answer your question?
You did. Thank you.
And we had one in the back there. Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Dee. I just want to know if you guys are going to maybe do something on the website to allow us to enter our CEUs to keep track of them.
Okay.
Because the MBRC does that. And that would save you guys headaches. That would save us headaches.
So it's a great question, Dee. Thank you. And I'm going to give you kind of the staff perspective where we are right now. The answer is yes. As a matter of fact, we're working on a shortcut with the licensing system, the license renewal system that we have right now, that you'll be able to enter in the name of the course and either scan the certificate or scan it has private certificates in it as a shortcut. Having said that, we are not the repository for your CEs.
Right.
We don't want you, right now we're not set up for you to send us CEs throughout the year and then have a database of all your continuing education from now till the time you renew your MBRC credential. Okay? But in the very near future, and I've said the date a couple times, in the very near future, before the end of the year, you will be able to enter your continuing education into your renewal application. So when you do your renewal application, please don't wait till the last minute. There's going to be a question in there. There's going to be a function for you to be able to upload your scans. Your renewal notice will have instructions on how to do that. So when we're able to do that and have that capability, your renewal notice that you get will have instructions on how to do that, have your scans available, what type of scan, whether it's a PDF or a JPEG or anything like that, all those instructions will be in your renewal notice when we're up and running with it. So thank you. What else?
Anybody else?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Billy. So I guess in regards to our renewal, because I'll be up for it this year, if our say, like, my birthday is on the 25th of October. We get that notice on the first of that month, or is that prior?
Your renewal notice goes out to you a couple months ahead of time.
Okay. And so, like, if we do, let's say, 10 or so online, and we have, like, a printout of each one of those, do we, like, mail that in, or like, I guess I'm confused on how we track or provide proof that we, like,
Good question. So, since you haven't renewed yet, what's going to happen right now when you renew your license within a week or so after somebody renews their license? We send you an audit letter, and that audit letter has instructions on what you need to do, how you need to send it into us. In the near future, when did you say your renewal is?
My birthday is the 23rd of October.
So you're going to be right in that area. So you're either going to get an audit letter from us, or it's going to be on the renewal application and in the application instructions. Please wait till you renew or till you file your application and send the CEs. If you send them to us before you renew or before we ask them for us, we don't keep them. Thank you for being proactive, but we just don't have the staff to be able to manipulate all that data, keep track of when you send them to us, and have them on file. So, does that answer your question?
Yes.
And as far as the format goes, they'll accept them. I think I said at the last meeting, you can take pictures of them on your phone and send them in. You can link them to an email if the scanning's not available yet. You can hand walk them in. Just make sure you make copies, because whatever you provide to the board is not going to be around after they talk to the application.
And can they send transcripts of the, like, the AERC will print you your transcripts that can be sent in lieu of individual certificates?
Listen carefully. The blanket statement on transcripts is that not all are accepted. It's a case by case basis. So if you have an AERC transcript, we accept those. It's a known entity. The health stream. What's the other one? What's one?
CEU Direct. It keeps a whole transcript of all the classes you've done. So that's why I was wondering, like, if it shows the grades of all the tests you've taken with the classes, with the exact CEUs, like the amount of CEUs there were, if you print that whole transcript and it shows the total amount of CEUs you've completed, and the date that it was done, the exact year that it was, because it'll show, like, if you did it in 2017 all the way up to 2019, whether they're current for that current renewal cycle, you know, is that an acceptable thing to turn in?
So, like, HealthStream and CE Direct, they can be. I'm not going to give you 100% today at all. So here's my, if you call me on the phone, and people call me all the time and say, is this class good? Well, it sounds like, until we see proof, the certificate, or in some cases, transcript, I'm not going to give you 100% answer. I'm going to say, well, if it's one of these 13 automatically approved entities that are providers, like American Health, or the Arizona Nurses Association, or the Arizona Society of Respiratory Care, if it's one of those, yeah, it's probably acceptable. But you're not going to hear me say, yeah, that class is good, because I can't see the certificate, analyze, and tell you, yes, it's a good certificate to prove that you completed it. Same thing with the transcripts. Some of the transcripts we get show the time that the student or the licensee spent doing the class. So some transcripts we get say, well, they took this class, you spent 35 minutes on it, was in this area, but it doesn't tell us how many hours it was approved for. So if you spend, so you have a staff member from a government agency is looking at a transcript that has 35 minutes on it, are we going to give you credit for an hour for that? No. Because you did prove to us that you have 1 hour of continuing education. So it's a case-by-case basis. So I don't want you to hear transcript and go, I can just submit that. You have to use some reason and logic behind what you submit so that we know that you completed it in the right area and it was approved by the right entity.
right? Mm-hmm. Pretty straightforward.
Anybody else? Yes.
Just two comments. I appreciate the fact that when I call the office, I can actually speak to them. However, I'm from Florida, and I think you're about 8 years behind as far as your CEUs and your tracking and regulation are going. Because we have CE growth over there. Well, I'm not an expert on here now. And for about the last 8 years, before you can get your license, you click the button. Everything's submitted electronically. Tells you whether you're eligible to apply for the license, and then approves it. And click on one or two steps to see if you're in. What you guys are doing right now seems so complicated and complicated.
Preaching to the choir. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. Thank you.
We had a comment last month to that same effect. But the question is that this agency is run on your licensing fee. So when you 90% of the money that you pay for initial license or renewal fee goes towards the agency, its budget, its programs. So the cost, and I've actually had seen brokering in a different industry, the cost that it takes this agency to run a program like that, to connect the databases, to pay for the software, is very high. The question you have to ask yourself, are you willing to pay more licensing fees to have that efficiency with the so, but because there's several vendors, not the CE brokers. There's several software vendors out there.
But the cost of renewing my license in Florida is only $55. So the population
more ill licensees,
much bigger,
right?
It's a great
issue with me. I'm not worried about.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
And over here, the gentleman up front. Yeah.
I'm Sean. The only concern or question I had is that when you have two licenses from different states making your CEUs, do they apply for that one renewal fraction of time when you're renewing, or do you have to get CEUs for both states?
That's a good question, too.
If you get a continuing education class from AARC on bioethics, good for 2 or 3 hours, you do that 6 months ago. That particular CE, if it can be submitted to MDRC for your credential renewal, it can be submitted to us, and it can be submitted to, for example, I think California accepts automatically AARC also. So depending on the state's regulation, yeah, you can use that 1 hour for several different.
CEUs different in California and Arizona?
Every state has a statutes or rules that dictate what you need to submit for your licensing in that state. You have to go by whatever that state requires. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's crossover and you get lucky.
Right.
Up until last year, Arizona was not a crossover state. You had to get specific units that were approved through Arizona. They've now since opened that up over the last 2 years, so now you have more options. So it is easier to submit other types of CEUs now. That's not the case in every state. You have to be aware of your regulations in every single state you hold a license.
So if you're in Texas or California, you call that state first and then find out how much CEUs they have to do.
Find out what types of CEUs they accept, how many, what type you need to get. Every state is different, so you've got to meet the requirement in every state. And if you have overlap, you are lucky. That's great. Take advantage of it. But you are not guaranteed an overlap.
And there was someone in the back. Yes?
I was just curious of how many actual ones you went through other states.
So I ran a report for a public information request yesterday, the day before. There were 4,154 licensed respiratory therapists. Our number traditionally, since I've been here, has always fluctuated right around 4,000 licensed people at any given time. So we're up at 4,100. I haven't seen 4,200 in the last 5 years, but 4,154 was. I couldn't tell you how many are actually practicing in the state or actually living here because I haven't run that kind of report.
So if I'm not, one more question. If I wasn't working, and I cut my license, do I have to have a doctor or whatever as my medical director still, or can I get a
license? So if you're talking about the renewal application?
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, know. You just do a blank. It's not going to kick the application out. So if you're not employed, I think there's a box for not employed. And you just leave it blank.
Anybody else? Great questions, you guys. And I can only speak for myself, but I think as the board, we really like to see that you're paying attention out there and you're interactive and you're inquisitive. So I thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right, we will move on to item H. Board members, are there any items to be placed on future agendas?
Why don't
they
look at me?
I have one thing I wanted to bring up. Has there been any more consideration thought at all about licenses that we might want to see go into a different phase rather than like retired?
Or retired instead of expired?
And I hate to be the old guy up here, but hey, I don't want to retire, but.
It's come up over and over again. As you know, I've reached out to try to get some. They require legislation. We need the statutory authority to be able to write the rule for place of inactive, retire. There's across the health professions, there's several different kinds of statuses that we can look at.
The board would have the authority itself to just say, okay,
we need a statutory authority to be able to do that. We don't have that. So you've heard me talk about the Auditor General's report. I reached out within the last 2 weeks to try to get a meeting with the Senate Health Chair so we can start working on legislation now for next year.
Okay.
I haven't heard back yet. It's on a list of things to do.
Does that mean to be, retired indicates that there wasn't any extenuating circumstances of the reason it was allowed to expire, right? It retired in good status.
Well, or somebody might not want an expired license if they've had it in practice for 40-something years.
Yeah. Right? The medical boards have good policy procedure on that because they've been using it for many years. So maybe we can plagiarize.
And we'll put it on a future agenda for discussion.
Right. So we can't talk about it anymore. But it will go on a future agenda.
All right, thank you.
Okay, anyone else for future agenda items? Going once? Going twice? We are adjourned at 11:18.
Thank you all.
Just kidding.
I'm still ruining everyone's credit.
I'm not
your live credit.
Okay,